The sun set. As usual in the South Pacific, the sunset, though spectacular, was not a drawn-out affair. The sun went away. It got dark. Keeping to the undergrowth, Anya worked her way around to the west of the main buildings. If the winning team had night vision equipment, she was sunk. But if they did, they didn't seem to be using it. She wondered if victory had made them overconfident. The field was not particularly well lit. There was no illumination around the runways. There was probably no budget to keep them lit at night unless there were planes landing or taking off. The blank rears of the two locked buildings were unguarded. She had carefully timed the foot patrols before moving in. They came her way about every 15 minutes. When Anya was sure that she was clear, she slipped in among the buildings. She moved quickly to the rear of the hangar where the relic was kept. It had huge double loading doors and a small door to the side. The walls were thin metal. She could see through the barred windows that the interior was mostly dark. She frowned at the metal end wall. Whatever she did, she had to do it quickly. Reversing her grip, taking the hilt of her sword in both hands, she pressed its tip against the slightly rusty wall to the right of the door. The blade punched right through the metal, like cutting up a can with tin snips. Anya cut from the level of her head to the ground. Withdrawing the sword, she turned its blade horizontal and pierced the wall again at the top of the first cut she had made. She sliced right to left for about 3 feet. Her skin began to crawl for fear of guards happening by, but she made another similar cut a couple of inches from the ground. She pushed on the metal door she had cut. She opened the flap just far enough to squeeze through. She slid the flap roughly back into place. The hangar's rear was dark, and the patrolling guards had shown no particular interest in it. She hoped they'd see nothing amiss. Apart from some work tables, shelves, and metal cabinets along the walls, the hangar was empty except for the mule with the casket loaded onto it. She moved towards it. There were no markings on the outside of the big box except some tool marks, indicating it had been jimmied open and then resealed. Climbing up on the open-topped vehicle's seat, Anya checked the crate's lid. It was nailed down. Anya slipped the blade of her sword into the crack between the lid and the crate's end. She leaned on it, working it around a little. She managed to slide about a foot of the blade inside. She levered up the corner. Anya burned to look inside, even though she suspected all she would see was the coffin, or, more likely, whatever packing material was used to protect it and keep it from banging around inside the crate. But that would entail getting the lid all the way off. She doubted she'd have time. Her heart beginning to pound, Anya reached into a cargo pocket of her shorts. From it, she took out a small circular object, surprisingly small considering its function. She pried up the corner just enough to glimpse straw-like plastic packing material inside and a glint of gray metal. Slipping the circular object inside, she tamped it with her fingers so it slid down between the packing stuff and the wood of the crate, safely out of view. Anya realized that a padlock was being removed from the big front doors. Anya rabbited toward the shadows at the hangar's rear. Stabbing the sword through the metal flap, she quickly levered it open far enough to slip through.
Oh!
The ragged edge cut her left forearm. Anya darted to another building nearby. She crouched down and checked her watch. If the patrols kept to their schedule, one must have gone past 13 minutes ago. She had less than 2 minutes to get clear. A quick check of her arm showed her the cut wasn't bad, but she didn't want to leave a blood trail. She quickly whipped off her shirt, leaving her torso bare, but for a sports bra, to the mercy of the biting night bugs. She tied it quickly around her arm as a makeshift bandage. Then she took off at a sprint for the shelter of the woods. Just in time, she dropped on her belly in the shadows. It had been a close race. The two guards passed just as she glanced back. The lights of the mule showed out from the hangar's far end as the vehicle and its precious cargo were driven out into the night. Evidently, the transport had arrived. The coffin was slipping through Anya's grasp again. She had known that might happen. It was the most likely outcome. After all, the little charter plane she'd flown on couldn't have held the crate, much less carried it away from the island. She couldn't even lift the thing by herself. Luckily, Anya had come prepared. This time, when the coffin in his crate was loaded onto the ship, it would carry with it the compact GPS transmitter she had slipped inside. There were worse places to be stuck than on the beach in Tahiti. Lying on her towel on Maiva Beach, with a colorful sarong wrapped around her waist and the island of Mo'orea rising from the turquoise waters of the lagoon like a cinder cone covered in lush tropical vegetation, Anya chafed at paradise. The coffin and its mysterious contents were slowly making their way across the Pacific to the Philippines, and there was nothing she could do but think. When, sometime before midnight, the inhabitants of Lurev had crept out of the hiding places they had so prudently found when the crazy foreigners started shooting up their island, Anya had pitched her best hysterical American tourist act for them. The locals, both native Polynesians and French colonial expats, were sympathetic. They were pretty shaken up too, although both sides of the firefight had treated the few inhabitants they dealt with, the ones who hadn't successfully scampered off into the scrub, with scrupulous politeness. It was like a war of the gentlemen. Anya would have loved to interview some of the gentlemen, whom the locals saw fit to continue to hold captive in the Quonset warehouse, although they replenished their supply of beverages and gave them food besides. No opportunity presented itself. The islanders were twitchy, understandably, and Anya did not want to call any unwanted attention to herself by pushing too hard to talk to a bunch of captured mercenaries, which the inhabitants believed the American fighters were. The locals treated Anya in a very friendly fashion. She soon relaxed, especially once she realized no one gave much thought to who she was or where she had come from. Since they couldn't fit her in their minds with either set of combatants, they took for granted she was who and what she said she was, and had arrived by charter plane, and awful luck, shortly after the white guys took over the airfield. A large and cheerful native family had taken her in. The husband was a machinist who made replacements for cars, boats, aircraft, and just about anything else with metal parts that broke. The wife ran a taxi and tour service. The kids, who ranged from toddlers to teens and whose numbers Anya was never sure of, especially since she was pretty sure neighbor kids circulated freely in and out, bombarded her with questions about America. She'd at last gotten to sleep in the wee hours of the morning. Morning had brought a French gunboat. It also brought final ruination of Anya's plans to talk to the prisoners. During the night, they'd got the hinges off a personnel door and escaped. They left behind the Hercules crew, including the guy with the busted ankle, who were a mixed bag of Americans and Australians and claimed innocence. The French colonial police kept them secluded, but the airfield manager, a fat, cheerful French expatriate from Lyon with an imposing walrus mustache, told Anya the flight crew claimed to be a charter, hired to pick up a cargo and fly it to the United States. They believed the plane could be made airworthy, although how long that would take and how much it was going to cost worried them. The authorities, while not notably sympathetic, seemed inclined to believe them. More to the point, the authorities believed Anya, especially when she brought out the hysterical American woman tourist routine again. Age of global paranoia or not, Lurev didn't have much by way of entrance and exit controls at the best of times. The airstrip barely had radar for the roughest and readiest form of air traffic control. She expanded on what she had told the locals. The light charter flight had arrived after the initial takeover, but before the Asian guys attacked. The charter pilot flew away and left her, mainly because he could. She ran off into the weeds and hid until the shooting stopped and the bad man went away. The end. She had the impression the authorities were simply going to throw their hands in the air on this one, and cross their fingers no reports of the battle found their way onto the internet. After all, nobody local had gotten dinged. So here she was, lying out on the white sand near the Sofitel Maiva Beach Hotel, which was a curious step design resembling a section cut out of the middle of a Mesoamerican temple. It was pleasant enough, and also relatively cheap, by Tahiti's ruinous tourist trap standards anyway. She had spent the last 2 days snorkeling in the lagoon to admire the coral and the brightly colored fish. that and fending off amorous advances from French and American tourists, trying not to get sunburned, and slowly going crazy. Thanks to some software, probably only mildly illegal, provided by her go-to geeks, Anya could actually track the ship now carrying the coffin in real time. And wasn't that exciting? Even watching a jetliner cross the Pacific live would have been like watching nothing happening at all, since on a 15-inch laptop screen it would move about an inch an hour. It would look like a still photo. And the ship moved much slower than that. She took a certain gloomy satisfaction in the fact that she couldn't see it anyway. The long-promised storm system had swallowed the Western Pacific, so far as satellite imaging and visible wavelengths was concerned. She was not about to pay the costs of trying to get more close-up pictures of the ship. She hadn't even gotten to see what it looked like, although she rather guessed it had a sort of pointy end, a sort of flat end, and was longer than it was wide. Anya fervently hoped that wherever they were going, the mysterious Asian fighters were seasick every nautical foot of the way. She still wasn't sure who was playing in the coffin sweepstakes, nor how many players there even were. But they were all mightily pissing her off. She kept close to the laptop. She laid it aside beneath a towel so the sun wouldn't fry its electronic brain. She spent a fruitless while trying to get into the book she'd grabbed on a whim at the hotel shop, a novel about the romantic adventures of an intrepid, globe-trotting female archaeologist, the intrigues she got up to, and the beautiful, exotic men she got up to them with. She was totally unable to suspend disbelief. These writers have no clue, she thought. She shut the paper back and dropped it back in the string bag she'd bought, tempted as she was to chuck it into the surf. She followed it with the computer, picking up the bag with one hand and the folded rental chair with the other. She trudged back to the hotel.
Rogue Angel is continued on the next CD.